versus Caleb A. Phillips. Should have noted in the first case that Justice Frydenberg was recused. He is also recused in this case. And with that, is it Ms. Holden?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
I would like to ask a few minutes reserved for rebuttal. Good morning. I am Jennifer Holden. I represent Caleb Phillips, the appellant in this case. Mr. Phillips was adjudicated on a violation of post-release supervision by the district court. And in two ways, the district court misapplied statute and this court's guidance already applied through State v. Kennedy. With regard to the post-release violation, State v. Kennedy, which is 299 Nebraska 362, has already established that 292268 sub 2 and 3 are the available sections for post-release violation adjudications. And they're alternative. They may not be used together. They may not be used as a hybrid. Section 2 applies to cases where post-release will be revoked by the court. Section 3 applies to cases where it will not be revoked. There's also guidance in Kennedy about the specific statute applying over the general. I believe that applying Kennedy to the facts in this case also results in the finding that the general section about probation, 292263, applies to post-release supervision violations proceedings only through the more specific statute 292268(3)(e). There is language in Kennedy about specific being applying over general. That's just true. There's also language about specifically that section. Kennedy found that once the state invoked the revocation process under 292268 and the district court found a violation, that court was not empowered at that point to invoke the early discharge provisions of 292263(2). Those are the early release provisions of general probation statutes. It follows here that the court's not empowered to extend that term of supervision that it was revoking under a later subsection 5.
Aren't we actually talking here, though, about the impact of Mr. Phillips' behavior before the revocation proceedings, during the time which he was absconded from post-release supervision, and at the time he was arrested on the warrant? Hadn't he already been absconded for a number of days, and hadn't the impact of that statute already applied?
I disagree that it applies automatically. I don't think that there's sufficient due process in that statute or other statutes to allow it to apply automatically. I think it's worth noting that he was arraigned properly at the time of his plea of no contest by the state, that the penalties that he
was facing... What impact does the arraignment... I'm sorry to interrupt. What impact does the arraignment timeline have on our analysis? In other words, at the time of arraignment, if someone gives a defendant the improper sentence, says it's a 2-5 and it's not, what's the impact of that?
The impact of that is that the defendant is on notice of the limitation of the penalties. If it's not corrected by the court at any time, I think that this court should see not just that it does limit, but it was in fact correct. So that's the impact. Justice, you of course are correct that all of the absconding behavior happened prior to any adjudication on this. I think that the problem is that the statute is structured in such a way that sub 3E, 292268(3)(e) directs you back and says that that has to occur, that it can be extended. Not that it is found or implicitly extended, but it can be extended. That's an option for the court. That language implies that it's not automatic, that it hasn't been rendered to be true. And I think that when you look at the structure of the statute, you can see that it matches the policy goals of LB 605. And I think that's what's important to see, is that the legislature wanted the courts to utilize community-based services through post-release.
But are they using any community-based services when they're absconding? Are they using any community-based services when they're absconding? They're absconded for the entirety of the post-release supervision. Is there any community services going on?
Certainly not in that example, no. They're available. They're available.
Okay.
But are they being utilized by the individual?
Does that reach the policy goals?
The policy goals, I believe, as stated in LB 605, are to reduce prison overcrowding, to limit spending in that regard, and to reduce recidivism through putting funds into the community. I think it's...
Public safety have anything to do with it?
Of course. Public safety is a concern. It's a stated concern.
They're not availing themselves of the services under post-release supervision. Is that meeting the policy goals?
It certainly... No, it doesn't meet the policy goals. The policy goals are supported by the structure of the statute created by the legislature.
The statute says to put the extended, the absconsion time at the end of the original term of probation.
That's a general probation statute that does not...
It's pretty specific as to absconsion, isn't it?
It does not use the term abscond. I think it's worth noting that abscond is defined, but that the language...
Disappears or leaves the jurisdiction of the court without permission?
It is very similar in nature. It does not use the word abscond. Abscond is a term in the definitions of the probation section.
How would you differentiate the two concepts? How is this different than abscond? 2263.
Abscond requires a minimum period of 14 days. It talks about away from the supervision of the court. It's defined as more specifically. I think we use them interchangeably. I just think it's worth noting when we're talking about the structure of a statute that doesn't invoke the term abscond. The argument is that the legislature intended to put pressure on the courts to continue to use community-based supervision through post-release. That's what the legislature believes results in a reduction in recidivism.
Does your interpretation reward absconding?
Does it reward absconding? It can if a judge does not use the structure given by the legislature and put that person back on post-release to comply. It's compliance with supervision, compliance with programming that reduces recidivism. If the legislature thought that it more imprisonment reduced recidivism, they wouldn't have structured it this way. Post-release would not exist. I think it's important to note that maximizing incarceration is not the only valid policy goal of the legislature. The legislature restructured the lower level felonies. They did so thoughtfully and with purpose, and the plain language of the statute and this court's interpretation of how the general probation statutes and the specific post-release violation statutes work lead to this conclusion. There's no reason to think that this court should find that sub 2263 sub 2 cannot be utilized, but sub 5 can be utilized when you're in post-release violation. That's what this court found in Kennedy.
Counsel, before you run out of time, I'd like to hear your argument on the jail credit.
Well, jail credit is even more straightforward. 47503 applies. It is a very straightforward statute. The case law could not be clearer that the credit for time served that a defendant's entitled to is objective and not discretionary. It's plain error not to calculate and award it. And it is in the record, that's PSI page 8. There's a report from jail that Mr. Phillips was incarcerated February 5 of 2018 to May 13th, 2018. So 98 days credit for time served is available.
When you look at this collection of statutes, what is a sensible integration of these statutes? What's a sensible way to treat the absconded time?
The absconded time is available to be returned to any continued order of post-release and can be added. That's clear in 3E. And jail credit applies. There is no exception. And it's a very straightforward...
You're putting them in the same basket, jail time and abscond time. But I'm just focused on abscond time. In a sensible structure, what would the defendant be entitled to during the period of, is it abscondence?
Well, when an individual is absconding, presumably they are not participating in supervision or services for at least 14 days. If the court wants to add that time back on using sub 3E, that's what they do. They say you're back on post-release, your term, you have 6 months left, and I'm adding the 45 days you didn't participate. That's your term, you're back on it, do what you need to do, follow the rules. Comply.
But that's two answers to one question. It will be noted that these days you had absconded, right? Now what do we do with those days?
And our position is that all of the guidance in Kennedy in the statute says, put them back on post-release if you want to tack on those days.
Under your interpretation, say a defendant is sentenced to 18 months of post-release supervision. They abscond on day one. They're not found again until day 179. Under your interpretation, the judge has two options, correct? You can either sentence them to one day imprisonment to serve out the remainder of the term, or the judge can say, well, we're going to add this back on and you can try again.
So you're saying, under this example, they've absconded for all but one day?
Correct.
Yes, I believe that's what the statute
says. Is that a sensible way to construe the statute?
May I answer the question?
You may.
Thank you. Is it a sensible way? Yes, under the statute structure, to utilize community-based supervision. I think it's just realistic that persons convicted of lower-level felonies are usually not instantly compliant, and I think the legislature acknowledges that continued efforts in the community are worth the time, and the structure exists for that purpose.
Isn't the phrase that we're called upon to interpret from 29-2268 sub 2, the remaining period of post-release supervision? Isn't that the key phrase?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wiss, good morning to you.
Please, I'm Wiss, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appley State of Nebraska. Two primary issues here are whether the 65-day jail sentence is invalid and whether he was denied credit for the 98 days of jail he served prior to sentencing. We maintain that Phillips is not entitled to relief on either claim. As far as the first issue, the validity of the 365-day jail sentence, the controlling statute here, of course, is 29-2268 sub 2, which provides that if somebody violates the conditions of their post-release supervision, a court can terminate post-release supervision and impose a term of imprisonment up to the remaining period of post-release supervision. The dispute here, as Justice Cassel has pointed out, is how to calculate the remaining period of post-release supervision when somebody has absconded for a period of time, as Mr. Phillips did. Our position, as set forth in our brief, is that the period of time during which someone has absconded is added back to the remaining period of time for post-release supervision, and that becomes the new remaining period.
Counsel, does that happen whether or not a motion to revoke is filed? In other words, if the state decides not to move to revoke, but someone has absconded for a period of time, does it automatically extend the period of their post-release supervision?
I believe that it would, yes. We would submit that this is the most logical interpretation of the Nebraska Probation Administration Act. The Act applies expressly to both offenders on probation and post-release supervision, and the Act itself specifically provides that if an offender has left the jurisdiction of the court during a term of his or her probation or post-release supervision, that time shall be added to the original term. And we would submit this as dispositive and controlling. Additionally, as we noted in our brief, our parole statutes and our case law interpreting our parole statutes contain analogous language, which have been interpreted and explained to mean that an offender who absconds is not entitled to time served for that period of time. Once apprehended, they must serve all of the remaining time, including the time during which they've absconded. We would submit that the same should hold true in the context of probation and post-release. So in this case, we maintain that the district court correctly added the 127 days during which Mr. Phillips absconded back to his sentence, giving a range of 422 days, which would mean that the 365-day sentence is valid.
Under the court's math, was the period of time that Mr. Phillips was sitting in jail waiting for final resolution, was that considered as part of his post-release supervision service but not absconded? If that makes sense. I don't know that I phrased it very well.
Are you referring to the 98 days during which he was in? Yeah, right.
I've jumped to the jail credit.
Yeah, sure. That's my understanding of the judge's calculations here. And as I pointed out in our brief, I think there's really two ways to approach the 98 days. You either sentence from the day of the arrest to the end date of post-release supervision, in which case you need to give credit for the 98 days because it would encompass the 98 days. Or the alternative approach, which the district court did here, is just say, no, those 98 days just go toward post-release supervision because you continued serving post-release supervision, so I'm not counting them, and similarly, I'm not giving you credit. I'm just going to sentence you from the day of sentencing up to the end date of post-release supervision. So yes, to answer your question, it wasn't really, effectively he got credit, but it was just treated as him continuing to serve post-release supervision rather than allocating those credit.
If we were to adopt your interpretation here for the purposes of future guidance to judges, what is the preferred way to do this?
Well, I'm not sure that we necessarily prefer one or the other. I mean, they are the functional equivalent. I suppose probably the cleanest way is to do what the district court judge did here, because I do think that he was correct that Mr. Phillips continued to serve the post-release supervision while he was incarcerated. And so at the time of sentencing, there's just no credit to award at that point in time. And so you go from sentencing forward and no credit enters the equation. So I think what the district court did here is probably the better and cleaner way to do this. But I don't think it would be wrong.
Let's assume Justice Papik's example of someone who's absconded for 179 days on a 18-month post-release supervision, and he is then held for 98 days before it's processed. Wouldn't what the district court judge did here, in effect, subject him to more imprisonment than he ever would have been responsible for?
Trying to run through the scenario in my head, Your Honor.
Well, at least, putting aside that example, isn't what the district court judge did here susceptible of someone actually serving more imprisonment than they would, the maximum that they would be legally required to serve?
I don't think so, because if you are taking the time for which they have sat in jail and applying it toward post-release, then at the time of sentencing, all you have left is the amount of time from the date of sentencing until the end date of post-release supervision.
I guess my question really is, what if that date has already gone by the date of sentencing, by some period of time? In other words, the number is negative.
I see. Well, in that context, I'm not sure what giving them credit rather than applying it toward post-release would do, because are we going to bank credit for some future case? I'm not quite sure what you'd do with credit if you gave it as credit.
Is there a tension between 47503 and the 292268 bunch with respect to actual jail time? Is there a hierarchy that should be applied to fulfill the defendant's obligation to do time?
I'm not really sure how to answer that. I mean, it's a bit difficult to analyze this, because good time or time for spent in custody and giving credit for it, typically the way that works, somebody is not, at the time they're sitting in jail prior to whatever happens happening, they're not fulfilling part of their sentence at that particular time. They're just awaiting for something to happen.
But they get credit.
Right, which is why we give them credit, because you were just sitting there. Whereas in this context, you are, in fact, arguably at least, fulfilling post-release supervision while you're sitting there, so credit may not be necessary. So I guess to answer your question, I mean, maybe there's a disconnect there. Maybe 47503 doesn't come into play because you just don't need to be granting credit. I'm not sure if that answers your question, and I'm not sure how to respond to the hierarchy.
Well, there's not all days are equal here. That's our problem, right? There's abscond days, there's jail time, there's post-release when you're actually doing it, you know.
Sure,
that's
sure.
Our problem. And in what order, if there order there be, and what hierarchy there be, to get to the end of a proper sentence.
Is it a sentence at all? Is it a sentence?
Is it a sentence at all?
Well,
the statute speaks in terms of imposing jail time, not resentencing the way a probation revocation would work. A post-release supervision revocation, you don't resentence on the original charge. You simply have some options that are laid out in the statute. But on a probation revocation, the trial court actually resentences the defendant on the original crime. Do we have a sentence on a post-release supervision revocation.
A subsequent sentence, I think.
That's what I am, yes.
I understand the question, I'm not sure if I have a good answer. It's certainly not as clean and easy to say yes as it is in the probation revocation context, because you're sentencing them anew, whereas here, it's more just that upon the happening of it being revoked, it's just defaulting to incarceration to fulfill the remainder of that sentence, so arguably, no, you don't have.
And doesn't 47503 deal with time incarceration pending sentencing?
It does.
That's one of the subsections, is that correct?
That's a good point, Your Honor.
Though there isn't a second sentencing, then is this time pending a sentencing? Does 47503 even apply?
Arguably not. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Do you think that's what Judge Colburn was suggesting in his remarks from the bench?
Well, perhaps. I guess I don't know. His remarks were a bit vague, and I certainly think in the end he got to the right result, and perhaps that is what he was getting at. I guess I just took it to mean that because those days were in fact served and went toward his post-release supervision, and he's not going back in time to sentence him for that period of time, he's not granting credit for that period of time. In other words, there's no overlap, so you're not getting credit. Perhaps he was thinking about this more deeply in that sense. I'm not sure, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, request that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Our next case of the day.